is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. Here on the Commons, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today are Karen Ellert Pena from San Antonio, Texas, and as a surprise, in the studio with me is my old friend Frank Short. Hi, Karen. Can you hear me? Just fine. Good. Thank you so much for joining us. I know that you, you're busy. You just opened up a brand new office.
Yes, I am. But it's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. I'm rather passionate about the issue and love to discuss it with anyone who's interested.
Well, there are a lot of people who are interested. Before we get even started on this, as you know, I put out an ad usually and let people know that who's going to be on the show with me. And there's been a lot of interest already, and I'd like to start with some of the comments that I've received. And basically, most people would like to know, A, how they can contact you, because I've had some people say, hey, listen, I've been having problems with my association, and I need to contact someone like Karen. And B, whether your article is available online. So would you like to give us contact information first and then information about the article?
Sure. I can be reached at my office in San Antonio, the number 210-694-2511. I also have an email address of RKP, as in Peter, ENA, at stic.net. The article is available on the legal websites, Lexis and Westlaw. It's not at this time available on any other website. I do have a very limited number of reprints of the article that I'm handing out to fellow attorneys that I know are interested and are fighting the cause for individual homeowners. So I believe I probably do have access to get additional copies for a small fee, and I can always look into that if I have such a demand.
Let me ask you something. Would it be possible to say if we put it on the website, or if I could put a link to it someplace on a website?
I can probably check in with St. Mary's Law Journal office. They, of course, have the copyright and would want to clear that with them and see how we could get this accessed by more people through the Internet.
Okay, because there is a lot of interest in it.
Certainly.
So we will be talking about it, and anybody who wants to listen can tune in, and you can... If you want to catch the show again, you can go to the website, www.onthecommons.com, and download it, because it will be uploaded later on this evening. Okay, Frank, you're sitting there sighing.
No, I was wondering whether we got enough volume on Karen's end of the line coming through my headphones here. It doesn't sound very loud. But
okay, I'm getting her loud and clear.
Okay.
She's coming through.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we're all set then. Karen, what made you write this article? It's called Reining in Property Owners Association's Power, Texas's Need for a Comprehensive Plan.
Well, I actually went to law school only because of a problem with a property owner association. My husband and I retired to a part of rural Texas and ended up in an association with terrible problems. And that certainly led me to law school. It's not really my only reason I'm there, but we decided the family needed a lawyer in order to protect our interests. We wanted to live in this little piece of paradise, they so-called paradise. And I agree with you, you know, it's not the utopia that it's made out to be. There are, you know, definitely problems with unknowledgeable individuals leading the helm of these organizations, and a lot of work needs to be done to not only bring them under the control, but to give them the education and the assistance necessary so that they understand their responsibility and carry out it properly.
You you said you went to law school because of problems you noticed. What can you, do you want to elaborate on that, or
The actual problems really dealt with the developer created. Of course, we were a brand new ranch community that was subdivided into acreage, and we were the first of 23 owners. And we bought, and 2 months later we come back to find he's cut a road and added an additional 1,100 acres to our 500 existing acres. And so the entire concept of what we bought into was changed overnight, which created numerous problems between the old and the new section and easement. And anytime you go to the country, you've got road issues, and snowballed, and we ended up having a board comprised mainly of the big, larger new section of 1,100 acres. They outvoted us on everything, and we were left just, you know, under their rule, which caused a lot of grief and really disrupted our whole way of life out there. I actually went in and discovered in the property records what had happened, what the developer had done, and found the case law that supported our position that there was no way he had the right to extend the easement to these additional 1,100 acres. And with all that, I really found out that I had a great fascination for the law, and knew that there was a need when it took us two attorneys and 2 years to get association records to look at and to review, and just one struggle after another. So I've kind of walked in the shoes of the people out there who have had these POA problems, and we certainly, my husband and I, feel their pain. And I knew that I really needed to do something, not maybe just for myself and my husband, but heard numerous complaints from other people, and it's out there in rural Texas, very small community we were in, as well as, of course, the big Houston, Austin, Dallas areas. So it's prevalent.
It is prevalent, and it's prevalent on a national basis because a lot of jurisdictions now mandate them. I mean, even small York, Pennsylvania, which is about as rural as you can get, came up with laws a couple of years ago mandating associations. You can't get away from them, and that kind of bothers me a lot, actually, because you don't have an option.
Right. There are no options, and, you know, this left such a bad taste in our mouth. We've now, in the past month, have sold our ranch property, came into San Antonio, have bought a home, and a friend asked me, well, did you end up with a POA? Well, of course I did, because there are no other options, you know. It's what's out here.
Oh, dear.
And you just hope and pray that you've got the right people running them and overseeing what's going on. So.
Well, the thing, you know, the thing we say quite often over here, right, Frank?
You're one election away from the need for a denazification program.
That's a good way to put it.
So, but you're right. I mean, there is nothing out there.
Right. There are no options. Just, and they say the older, you hear the older communities, like in the heart of San Antonio, are older and they don't have these POAs. Well, mm-hmm. They're built up. There's only so many people who can live there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So where does the overflow go? The overflow goes out into the suburbs, and it's ruled, developed by developers who need to be brought into this picture. because they're the ones who create the POAs. And in my article, I also address that, because the developer caused our problems out in rural Texas. It's the way he structured it, and knowingly what he did by adding such a big piece of land onto our original development. The Uniform Planned Community Act has provisions in there that address the developer. And I think that always needs to be looked at as a starting point in these POAs. And they should not be allowed to add excessive amounts of land. They should be able to, or they should be required to lay out what the common area is going to be, what the common assets are going to be. You know, we bought in on river frontage, and we were supposed to have a river pavilion, and you know, you just hold your breath waiting till it materializes if you buy in on the new end.
Promises, right?
Right. And so it just needs to be firmed up in law, which I was glad to see at least the Uniform Plan Community Act does incorporate that within their act.
You, in your article, you sort of, and I want to very briefly touch on some of these. You talk about a number of different horror stories that you found. I mean, Glenda McCoy, her litigation ended up costing her, what, something like $70,000 or in excess of $70,000?
Oh, yes. The sad Brenda McCoy, the McCoys went through, I think it actually in Tomball, outside of Houston. And there it was a deck railing that supposedly didn't pass the architectural committee's sign-off. But they filed suit on this after their new home was completed, not during the building process when it would have made better sense to do it, but after the fact. And, you know, a lot of grief, and you can listen to this woman in the tapes of the meetings where she spoke at the Senate and the House hearings, and you can tell the hurt and the pain that 2 years later she's still experiencing when she was speaking. You know, she considered herself lucky because they settled and she recovered some nominal amount of fees to pay the attorney's fees. But just astronomical what the bill supposedly from the fines associated with the violation grew to be. And then we're settled. But you drag people through the litigation, and it takes a pound of flesh. And in my experience, it takes more like several pounds of flesh, and it's not a pleasant thing to have to go through in order to protect your rights.
But you say in here that it was like $70,000 in litigation fees, but also $115,000 in fines.
Right. In fines that were mounted up through this process. And I believe that's one of the other comments I found during my research is when these POAs turn these issues over to attorneys, they lose sight of the attorney's fees that are involved. And there's an escalation, and the board sometimes really kind of write a blank check, and they really don't see what that's accumulating and becoming through the process. And
well, there's a reason why the boards take that attitude, and that is that the boards are told by the association attorneys that they can simply pass these attorney fees on to the homeowner. As a lien against the property, which eventually, if necessary, can be collected through non-judicial foreclosure, at least here in Virginia. And so you get a notice of violation of architectural guidelines. You get a summons to appear before a kangaroo court with due process on a par with that of the trial of Joan of Arc. You you are fined by this entity, and if you don't pay the fine, they sell your house on the courthouse steps for pennies on the dollar.
And that was the case here in Texas. The one good thing this last session, when they finally passed the Texas Residential Property Owners Protection Act, no foreclosure for fines and fees only, but still that exists for the non-payment of assessments.
Yeah, of regular assessments.
Mm-hmm. Regular and special.
But Karen, what they're doing is, if you send in your assessment, sometimes it's late legitimately, sometimes you're really behind, sometimes they just don't bother. Either they'll return it, they don't accept it, or they'll sit on it until the past due date, and then they add late fees. So when they do accept your check, you now owe late fees. So they take the late fees off the top and then apply the rest of the check to the assessment, which makes you short, because if it's $100 and you owe $10 in late fees, you're now $10 short on your actual assessment. So they tack on another late fee. And this keeps going. So pretty soon, I mean, the books are such a mess, that pretty soon you actually owe, supposedly, assessments. You've always been behind. And I don't know, can they just play that shell? I mean, it's basically a shell game from what I can see.
What you're saying sounds as such, and it seems unfortunate if we, the homeowner, in order to protect our interest, have to start making our payments through certified mail, return receipt requested, to substantiate when it's received and the like.
Right, and insist on the check that this is a check to be applied toward the regular assessment. They can't apply it to anything else. See, there's a line of cases out there, Karen, about by homeowners associations and the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
Oh, okay.
And, CAI, the Community Association Institute, this trade association for these characters, they litigated this in federal courts all across the country. And they began to lose in one after the other after the other on the issue of whether dues to a community association are debts. Consumer debts within the meaning of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. My favorite case on this issue is a case involving a law firm in Maryland, district in Maryland. The name of the law firm is Palmieri and Palmieri, in which the U.S. District Court for the District of Maryland said, not only are we going to hold that these community association dues are debts, and that the association is subject to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, but we're going to inquire into whether the law firm is a debt collector.
Exactly.
And if the law firm is a debt collector, and the law firm violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, then we will consider whether sanctions ought to be imposed and penalties ought to be imposed under that act. And they didn't stop there. They said, moreover, if the board of directors of the association knew or should have known what the law firm was doing, and if the law firm violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, then we will also hold the board of directors accountable.
Oh, excellent.
And they will be subject to penalties as well.
Right.
And what has happened lately is that CAI has kind of retreated from trying to litigate this. And now they've tried to legislate it.
They're lobbying. They're lobbying really hard at the federal level to get this overturned, or to make sure that associations are not consumer debts, or your assessments are not consumer debts for the purposes of the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. But what I usually tell people to do, if the association office is reachable, some of them are out of state, you know, you have to mail your checks. But if you can walk them in, what I tell people to do is to write their checks out and then make a copy of it and go to the office and hand deliver it and get someone at the office to sign and date the photocopy of the check. and keep it for your own records. So they can't say, well, gee, it arrived, you know, 2 minutes after the deadline.
Right, and that's good, like you said, if they're on site or whatnot and can get some
right.
physical receipt for the money paid.
Yeah, I had some a gal on here, Jean Louie from Arizona, a few weeks ago, and she sent in her check, and it was returned to her because the manager, not the board, but the manager decided she didn't like what was written on the memo line. I thought there was something obscene written on the memo line, and it wasn't. She had just put her lot number down there.
Good.
And they refused to accept it, and so they're now facing foreclosure. Not because they withheld assessments, not because they owed anything, but because they played these games with them. They didn't like the check. They refused to accept the check.
Well, it doesn't sound like good faith there. And that's another issue I have with the duties that are owed to the homeowner and building into our legislation the fiduciary duty of the board. I know when I went and spoke at the Senate hearing this last session, I was addressing it and said that, you know, the fiduciary duty needs to be brought in. In Texas, it's already built into our Condominium Act. It seems irrational that condominium owners can have this duty, but homeowners can't. And more times than not, in San Antonio, the homes are a larger asset than a condominium even is. So I don't know what the rationale was. But then I had the Community Association Institute representative follow me up and said, well, that's already covered. It's in the Nonprofit Corporation Act, and we really don't need to be adding that. Well, you go to the Nonprofit Corporation Act, that language is not a fiduciary language. It's simply a good faith and ordinary care. And I feel adamantly that when you're dealing with an individual's largest asset and most cherished asset as our home, shouldn't we, you know, require boards to have a fiduciary duty to us, the members?
Well, Karen, here's how, and Shu and I have been present when CAI-affiliated attorneys have spun this to boards of directors. In fact, you know, we've been on the board of our association for several terms ourselves. And the association attorney will come in, and he'll lecture the incoming board about their fiduciary duty to the corporate entity of the association. And he'll bend over backwards to distinguish between the duty to the corporate entity and the duty to individual homeowners. And that's kind of wherein lies the problem here, because boards of directors have no compunction whatsoever about hosing individual homeowners from morning till night. And they justify it by wrapping themselves in the mantle of their duty to the corporate entity. They forget that the corporate entity wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the homeowners.
Exactly. And I guess our Condominium Act then is clear in that it actually mandates that each officer or member of the board is liable as a fiduciary of the unit owners for the officers' or members' acts or omissions. So, to me, I liked that wording, and what I suggested was we just pick that up from the Condominium Act and drop it into what we're calling this a Texas Residential Property Owners Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's truly for the property owners' protection, it seems somewhat still more slanted to the POA board.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'd kind of like to get the word consumer in there someplace, because what's been missing from this is that homeowners, you know, the associations are out there to provide a service.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only reason we have them. And they provide that service to the homeowners, and the homeowners are consumers. And we're going to reach the point, I predict, where this will be viewed as a consumer protection issue across the country. You know, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is a consumer protection piece of legislation, and I think we need to get the attitude of consumer protection built into these property owners' statutes at the state level. But let me ask you one other thing about the Texas legislation. Some of the characters who were associated with this legislation have achieved a degree of national notoriety here. Not because they're such, brilliant architects of legislation, but because of their interests outside the legislature. Are you aware that there's a senator down there who at least, I don't know what his affiliation is now, but in the past, he's been affiliated with a number of property management companies, and he's been one of the leading drafters of legislation.
Actually, he's the owner.
Yeah.
He owns.
And I don't know that personally. I know that through information that I have read on this individual senator. And I think from what I've also heard that was some of the holdback in getting the Senate Bill 699 through the session prior to this last one, the 2001. That required education of our board members because there was some thought that, he was going to go out there and develop educational videos and, have a whole nother sideline there. And although I do feel as though education is critical, but it's got to come from the right source as well.
Yeah, it depends on who does the educating. CAI is out there sort of advocating education.
They'll call it education, but if you go to some of their courses, it's at least as much indoctrination. I mean, for every grain of educational stuff, you get two or three grains of indoctrination.
Right, and that's what I'm afraid of, that, we need some more neutral source of education that will help, or as I advocated for, a more comprehensive plan that would allow these directors to sit down and read through in one place in the code what they're supposed to be doing, what they can, what they cannot do. Kind of a one-stop shopping list, roadmap to put them on the right track, because I found it interesting in my research, one commentary made the comment that these boards are not always manned by real nice people. And some people with an agenda, some people with nothing better to do than to make other people's lives miserable, and they're not always good intentioned individuals, which is unfortunate. But there's an awful lot of volunteers out there doing it, and I would like to think that there are more good ones than not, and they're looking for direction, and the direction isn't out there for them the best that it could be.
Well, I think a lot of them are handpicked by managers and their attorneys, who know that you get the right people on there, the people that they can manipulate, basically, then they've still got a job.
Well, that's true too.
And, the other thing that I want to get, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I kind of want to talk a little bit about voting in associations. And if you're going to be promoting or legislation, I think that we need to talk about that. But let's take a quick break, and we'll be back. Don't go away.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. they're full of woes. No pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. It is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Wyndham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olton, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you will not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons with me today are Karen Elliott Pena, from San Antonio, Texas. And in the studio with me is Frank Short, my co-host at times. And Frank, I think you've got some news that you want to share with us.
Yes, we do. This is kind of a preliminary piece of news because we found it the other day and we haven't been able to follow up on it very much yet. But there's a publication called the Communications Daily. And on January 2nd, 2003, they published the following very brief article. It says, the FCC is taking comments on a petition for a declaratory ruling asking the commission to determine whether a homeowners association can restrict residents' use of TV reception devices. The petition asks the commission to decide whether the Woodmere Townhome Association, that's spelled W-O-O-D-M-E-R-E, Townhome Association of Darien, Illinois, has illegally restricted the installation and placement of TV broadcast antennas. The petition charges that the association is violating the FCC rule preempting restrictions that impair installation, maintenance, and use of over-the-air reception devices by requiring prior approval and refusing to allow antenna installation on roofs. And comments to the FCC are due by January 31st. So you can go to the FCC website, which is at fcc.gov, and as of yesterday, they didn't have any more information on the FCC website. It may be a couple of days because of the holidays before it'll actually be available there. But those of you who are interested in being able to install and place broadcast antennas, and if you're interested in protection against the arbitrary decisions of the homeowners association regarding the placement and installation of antennas, you want to find out more about this, and I recommend you find out from the FCC.
I think they also have an 800 number that you can call and try to get more information. I'll try to follow up. I did some research yesterday, and I was not able to find anything. Like you, Frank, I didn't find anything on their website. But I guess that's an example of the adult supervision that you've been talking about.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you know, we can talk about government oversight by a quote unquote real government in this issue because I think, and you know, I'm not a fan of any more government than we absolutely need to have, but. To the extent that what you've basically got is a quasi-government out there with no separation of powers, no system of checks and balances. You know, one branch of government, the board of directors, is the executive, legislature, and increasingly the judicial branch within an association. We need our real government to get involved as a matter of consumer protection.
Well, this is definitely a consumer issue.
Yes, it is.
What do you think of that, Karen?
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea. And I mean, these are mini governments, and there are no checks and balances. And when members have to scratch and fight to look at records and try to oversee what's happening, and they run into such roadblocks, we probably need help from the government. My only concern is that in order to allow for that, it's possible that it's going to slow our progress in getting legislation. If we take little baby steps as opposed to these giant steps, and I think that's what happened in Texas. The Senate Bill 699 was a giant leap forward, which was more encompassing and included, like we had said, the education, also brought in the Attorney General's office, and there were concerns with, well, how was all of this going to work, and where was the manpower coming from? And in essence, I think that slowed the progress on the bill. Eventually, it would be great to have that protection in there for homeowners. The viability of that at the get-go, I'm not sure is quite feasible.
Well, let me suggest to you that where the manpower would come from,
okay.
If you look at why associations are mandated in the first place, they're mandated because they provide for state and local government a source of revenue completely disproportionate to what it would cost the states if they had to provide the infrastructure.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
In other words, you mandate a community association, all of the streets, all of the sewer lines, all of the trash pickup, all of the snow removal, all of the services that are normally provided by government entities in the traditional, you know, system of 20 or 30 years ago, are now the private obligation of the owners of that association. But the property taxes on those homes are no less. If you got one home in an association and another home exactly the same, across the street from it, that is not within an association, you won't see any difference in what the county will charge you in property taxes.
The taxes are essentially the same, so they're basically balancing their budgets on the backs of homeowners in associations.
Right, and they've increased their tax base with little or no obligation.
That's right.
Self-financed development.
And I think part of the obligation, if you want to increase your tax base that way, is to put in place a consumer protection entity empowered to make sure that the corporate entity of these homeowners associations doesn't go around and hose the consumers, i.e. the homeowners.
See, this is, I mean, the industry will tell you, oh, you know, this is a private contract. It's a contractual agreement. The homeowners agree to it. You cannot get involved in this. Government, get the hell out. And government is all too happy to get out because they can still collect the taxes and not provide the services and not interfere. They don't have to deal with you. And they're using this as a tool, as a mechanism to distance themselves from their constituents and from the taxpayers. You know, if you contact your local legislators, they'll tell you, oh, go talk to your homeowners association. We can't get involved in that. That's up to you and between you and your association.
But we as a people need to get involved and grassroots it or whatever.
That's right.
We need to do to, we're the ones who vote the...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, we vote the members in and vote them out.
Absolutely.
And you probably gave us the ultimate case of, you know, getting involved. I mean, this put you through law school. This issue. And, you know, Shu and I have been joking for years. There's a clothing company up here, and their slogan is an informed consumer is our best customer. And, you know, Shu's come up with the line, you know, that an informed homeowner is the worst nightmare of these associations, and they're waking up to the fact that lawyers and legislators and police officers and postal inspectors live in these places.
And you went to law school, which is phenomenal, I think, just because of this. I mean, I ended up taking a course and becoming a certified radio producer just to get the word out there.
Well, and I think that's wonderful. But I'll tell you, I'll share what was a little distressing when I went to Austin, to our capital. I took my first draft of my article around trying to get them to rework their initial bill. I didn't run into many of the senators or representatives, but their aides, and I was flat out told, you need to go get your people together and get your money together.
Exactly.
And come back and talk to us.
Exactly.
And I was naive, I don't know, in the closet,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I just didn't expect that from my
mm-hmm.
government.
Exactly.
And to hear it, it was just... you know, it's distressing that, you know, it shouldn't have to take that, shouldn't have to take me and my people and our money to get this done. Our representatives and senators are there to figure out what's wrong and how to make it better.
But you see, they've got these associations, and they're the first layer of government.
Mm-hmm.
Go deal with them. But
right.
They're the problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, and... The only oversight is to go to court right now.
Right. The only oversight is to go to court. Now, I remember one woman who was trying to get her records to look at. It took her three attorneys, and her third attorney was looking at the records in the judge's chamber. Now, is that ridiculous or what? Judicial economy is what we preach, and yet we're using the judge's time to sit in chambers to look at association records because they're playing hardball and they just won't let you come in during normal business hours and look at things. It's something's got to give. And
one of the reasons I ran for the board about 15 years ago was because I asked to look at some minutes and was told I didn't need to since I wasn't a board member. I said, all right, we can remedy that. So
yeah.
Frank and I ran for the board, and we changed things. But, you know, unless you're willing to sit there for years and years and years and sort of collect dust.
Well, Karen, let me ask you something about the state of the law in Texas. If you do sue your association... And when is there a basis to recover attorney fees built into your statute?
I had asked for that and was told that there is in the Civil Practices and Remedies Code. It's strange how the Community Association Institute representative, when I addressed the Senate, hearing the last time on this, came right behind me and said, oh, there's no need for that. But within the language of the statute, there was a direct provision for the board to receive its compensation for
yeah.
its attorney's fees. And it's like, why is there this double standard? It would be clear as day if you just stuck it in our Property Owners Protection Act
mm-hmm.
that it's there in black and white.
It would go a long way towards leveling the playing field.
That's exactly right.
And we have that in Virginia, that, you know, the prevailing party in a suit to enforce the governing documents is entitled to recover reasonable attorney fees and court costs. And that has been invoked several times by homeowners. And it scares the bejesus out of the CAI lawyers, because all of a sudden, if they lose, the board's not going to be real happy paying the homeowner's attorney fees.
Of course.
But let me suggest to you what may be another remedy, certainly a remedy that I'd like to see, and Shu and I have discussed it before, and we've modeled it on a remedy that was employed against CAI itself by the Federal Trade Commission. I believe it was in 1992, but you can find this on the FTC website if you go in with Community Association Institute and do a search.
Okay.
The Community Association Institute had a, to coin a phrase, an ethical rule that if you were accredited by CAI as a property manager, you could not solicit a business from another homeowners association where a PCAM or a certified, you know, CAI certified property manager was employed, because this was deemed, you see, to be unethical. Well, the FTC took a look at that, and they deemed it to be a violation of the restraint of free trade, anti-competitive.
Right.
And the remedy they fashioned was to require CAI, this is built into a settlement agreement, and it's all, you know, available online. CAI agreed to publish in their esteemed magazine called Common Ground, basically an account of what happened, and to reinterpret their concept of ethics so as not to preclude actions that basically would get homeowners a better deal. I would like to see a homeowners association that is held to have violated the governing documents or any state or federal consumer protection provision. I'd like to see them required to publish notice of that violation in their newsletter or by special announcement in such way that every homeowner gets it, and that they are required to maintain it on record for inspection and review by any homeowner. I'd like to see it maintained by a governmental entity where anybody in the state can go in and look up any property owners association and see if they've ever been cited for this. I'd like the notice to identify each member of the board of directors responsible for the violation. I'd like the notice to include the publication of a remedial policy that would have to be approved by the court to ensure that there wouldn't be any future violations of this consumer protection. And I would like all of this information included in disclosure packets to prospective buyers for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, that way, I mean, what CAI is going around scaring these directors with is, oh, you know, the bad guy consumer protection guys, they want to fine you and they want to, you know, they want to, you know, come after you monetarily. I don't want their money. I just want them exposed. And, you know, once we start exposing them, they're going to get it real fast. And, you know, then they can be more easily held politically accountable at the next election. Somebody wants to run against them and points out that, you know, Bozo the Clown over here not only, you know, violated the law, but he had to publish, you know, the fact that he violated. And here's how much it cost this association in attorney fees to pay off the guy whose rights were violated.
Right, and they seem to feel as though they're protected by their DNO, their directors and officer policy that they carry.
Mm-hmm.
I know we bought into a condominium here in San Antonio, and the same thing happened. We had bad directors. We've now voted them out, and now can't get DNO insurance because of the bad record. But these individuals will just go back into the woodwork, and then when we're gone, you know, pop back out because no one else is interested in running, and then you'll have these same guys back in. And,
yeah.
And if there were some sort of notice, I think that's a fine idea to keep it on record and.
Well, I'd like to point out that not one of the board members on in the Champions Improvement Homeowners Association in Houston, this is the association that foreclosed on Winona Blevins last year, ran for re-election. Even those who were not up for re-election decided to step down because they didn't have any support. It was a clean sweep. They were all gone. And I think that the fact that you had a lot of media attention on that case helped a whole lot.
Yeah, well, the property manager and the attorney should have been history as well, and I don't know whether the clean sweep included those guys. But if it didn't, then all you're doing is rearranging deck chairs. You're getting your advice and your management from the same place.
Yeah.
Well, but at least the board was gone. I don't know. I think the attorney was gone as well, but I'm not sure about the manager. Karen, we're running out of time, but you wanted to talk a little bit about access to corporate records. I told you the hour goes really fast.
Yes, it does.
I want to make sure that you get in what you wanted to get in. Do you want to grab a couple minutes?
On the access to records, well, we've touched upon it somewhat, but when we actually had better language in our first 699 bill in Texas, which then didn't get passed, now with the Texas Residential Property Owners Protection Act, we do have a small provision that addresses open records. But unfortunately, at the last, the 11th hour, they added into the statute that the records are available only for proper purpose. They pulled this proper purpose language from the Texas Nonprofit Corporation Act. That is what caused my husband and I grief as to what proper purpose is. And I suggest, too, that Texas should go back to the Uniform Condominium Act or look at North Carolina's Planned Community Act. They both use a simple, clear language that says business records are available during business hours, period. None of this proper purpose that can be construed by board members to mean anything.
I think
that's what took us, two attorneys, in order to get this worked out. And this other Silva woman, it took her three attorneys and a judge's chambers to get it worked out.
See,
we don't need that ambiguity in our code.
Yeah, CAI is notorious for this ambiguity. We've got the proper purpose language up here in Virginia. And when I have requested records under it, I just say that my purpose for looking at the records is in furtherance of my rights as a homeowner to address the board of directors about the issues that I'll find in the records. You know, I want to go talk to the board about it, and it's not for a commercial purpose. And so far, they haven't tried to jerk me around on that, but you know, they know who I am too. The other thing is that. We had up here an exemption from turning over records that involved, quote-unquote, potential litigation, that any records about an issue that was potential litigation could be withheld and could be discussed in executive session. And Shu and I actually went to see a legislator up here, and we said, look, that's anything. You know, the fact that I'm asking for the record, and if they don't give it to me, I might sue them, is catch-22. Now it's potential litigation. And so we got the legislature to define potential litigation as something that that can be claimed only when there has been an actual threat of lawsuit sent in by a party or a representative of a party. And it's not up to the board just to think, oh, somebody might sue on this, and therefore it's potential litigation.
Right.
Well, somebody might sue on anything.
Yeah.
You know. Well, I think any legislation, any consumer protection legislation, has got to include no foreclosures, no fines. Fines have been found to be unconstitutional in two different states, Virginia being one of them. And I think also the fact that homeowners are denied the right to vote has got to stop, because that's a great way of manipulating the outcome of elections. And that's my two cents worth.
Without a doubt, if you don't have the vote, you're not going to implement change. You're not going to vote out the directors that shouldn't be there. And if you're going to take away their fundamental right to vote, we've got serious problems.
I mean, that doesn't happen in the real world.
Right. And if they're the mini government that we're saying they are, and they're acting as such, then why not hold them to the same level?
I agree. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today on The Commons. It's been a pleasure having you on. I wish you all the best and all the success with your new practice.
And congratulations on a terrific law review article. I hope everybody will read it.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it immensely. And I'll get back with you, Shu, on accessibility to my article on the Internet once I clear it with the Law Journal office.
Great, because I know there are a lot of people who are very interested in that. But we've got to go right now because Mo's up and he's here and he's dying to get into the studio and the door's locked. Ha ha ha, but I'm going to have to let him in. Anyway, thank you so much, Karen. Frank, it's always a pleasure to have you on with me.
Fun to be here.
And for the rest of you, please plan on joining us every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio and on the Internet at www.onthecommons.com. Stay tuned because up next, it's Mara Smith with Mo Show, and we'll see you all next week.